See what large letters I use. You're wondering what that is, huh? Like my son Andrew and the large letters that he's writing right now. Just can't stay in the lines, but he's going to get there. What Paul has been doing all along in this letter has been dictating it to a scribe. Paul was not a professional scribe. These letters had to be mailed by courier to various churches to be read. This one, of course, is going to Galatia. Numerous churches that he himself had founded, and presumably either with maybe an ailment that Paul had in which he couldn't see very well. Some suggest, others that his penmanship would have been quite terrible. We don't know, other than the fact that he was speaking to an amanuensis, a scribe, writing it down, and now he wants to close the letter out by saying, okay, notice the change in script here. I have something to say. We're going to wrap this up. This is a point of emphasis. It's not a point of, or some scholars like it's him talking down to them. Not at all. It's emphasis. He says, pay attention here. This is where I've been moving to this entire letter. I want you to know that I've just said, I don't care how bad the penmanship is. I don't care if my eyes fail me. I'm going to write this down for you to hear as it is read to you in the assembly. And it is in this section that we find the true nature of the Christian faith that he's been unfolding in numerous places throughout this letter. And the questions that he wants to answer are these, and just two of them. Is the Christian religion inward or is it outward? And secondly, is it human or is it divine? Is the Christian faith inward or is it outward? It is to say, is it a matter of that which is in the heart or that which everybody sees on the outside? Paul all along has been fighting with these teachers who have come in to this community and saying, you know what? You need to have other things attached to the gospel of Jesus Christ. He's been fighting all along to make it very clear that the cross of Jesus Christ does not need anything to be added to it. But these teachers have come in, and they are actually advocating for an outward religion. Specifically with circumcision, which is very much an outward act, to signify and designate those who are the people of God, but at kind of keeping of the law unfolds in a variety of other ways, from the cleanliness laws to following all the jots and the tittles of whether or not a person can actually take a certain number of steps from their home on the Sabbath before they've actually broken God's law and avoiding the Ten Commandments. It's actually detracting from what the heart of the Ten Commandments are all about when they make all of these varying things that need to be followed. And Paul says, listen, these are people who want to impress others by means of the flesh. In fact, later he says that they want to boast in your flesh. What does he mean by these things? These are those who are advocating for a religion in which all the things that they do will be noticed by others. All the things that they perform can be said, look at that person and how amazing they are for God. They are following all the things that God wants them to do and allows them to be boastful in themselves. They want to impress people by looking, look how holy I am. Look at the depth of my prayers. Look at the way in which I am following the law to a T. Look at the way in which I am impressing people wherever I go. And such people, when they are teaching, they love to say, look at my followers. Look at the people who are coming to my lessons. They're coming to my preaching. They're coming to hear what I have to say, and they're following me, and I can boast in them. They did what I told them to do. This is outward religion. And it has a long history from the beginning of it all. We get Isaiah railing against outward religion in the time of the exile. And then Jesus comes along in his fight with the Pharisees. And he kind of blows a gasket in Matthew 23 on this. He says, listen, the scribes and the Pharisees, they sit on Moses' seat. That means they have the law. And so, do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works that they do. For they preach, but they do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with a finger. They do all their deeds to be seen by others. They make their accessories, their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, and they love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the churches, the synagogues, and greetings in the marketplaces, and being called rabbi or teacher by others. But you are not to be called rabbi. You have one teacher, and you are all brothers. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. For you neither enter yourselves nor allow those who would enter to go in. That's heavy. But look at what's at stake. This outward religious performance that in the end, when you add it all up, is actually a system that they can't keep themselves. Paul says it as well. They who are circumcised don't even keep the law, because you can't. And when you teach and have others follow the same way, they fall short, and therefore you shut yourself and others' faces from the kingdom of heaven. This is what's at stake. And Paul says, you know what? Neither circumcision nor uncircumcision is anything. It's the new creation. It's the person whose heart has been transformed, whose life is being renewed from the inside. That you can scrub the outside, he says, all you want. But it's what comes out of a person that shows the degree to which they're clean, and Jesus would say. And Paul reminds people that it's that new creation. It's actually an inward reality of God transforming a heart. And why is that important? It's because the second question is answered here as well. Is the heart of our religion a human reality or a divine one? That is to say, is really our religion about a system in which we impress and please God, or is it actually an action of God on our behalf that we either accept or reject by faith? Paul would say it's the latter. It's the opposite of those here who are advocating for that human system, advocating for, look what we're doing for God, and therefore how it exalts us, and how people should look at us, and how I can compare myself to others who are failing to keep it. They're boasting in what they do. They're boasting in what we do in response to this. Why is this important? It's because people throughout human history have always been looking for the silver bullet. Give me the secret insider information of what I can do. And the Christian religion for centuries now, and it goes back also to Abraham, where he was justified by his faith, not what he did. He trusted God that he would become a blessing to the nations. But it's really supremely seen in Jesus Christ that says, this religion, that you cannot do anything for yourself, that God alone has to do it for you. And humans for centuries now have wanted to reject that truth. Why do we want to reject that truth? Because we can't boast in ourselves. Because we have to admit that we are powerless to do something that we think we should be able to set right. The cross is actually an offensive symbol when you look at it. It says that you were so helpless, you were so lost, you were so fallen, that God had to come and do for you what you couldn't do for yourself. That's an offensive reality, but it's the heart of our faith. And it's been no secret that people all for centuries now have said, that just can't be enough. That just can't be the heart of what it is to be a follower of Jesus Christ. There has to be that plus something else. And so they write a book. They have a new teaching. I've got a secret for you to unlock the potential of your life. Have a new direction and a new focus. And sometimes the most suspicious places to find these kinds of attempts are in Christian churches. Isn't it ironic that even in the Christian faith, that this has been our worst temptation, that the cross isn't enough? How it is that we unfold, how Sundays look, the new amazing teacher that comes on the scene and unlocks something that's never been said before. Boy, I've been tempted in this regard for years. As a follower of Christ and struggling with various things of my own identity, I have consistently read the most popular books on the market thinking this is going to be the one that's going to turn me around. It's a Christian author. It's got to be right. As a pastor, I've looked at websites and churches, and come this Sunday, and this is the one sermon series that's going to change your life. For I've received a word from the Lord that you need to hear, and this is going to be it. You've been lost for long, but just come hear me on Sunday. Doesn't it sound human to you? Doesn't it sound outward to you? That someone has unlocked something that really Christians have never realized for 2,000 years of an open Bible? This is a humbling reality to say the cross is enough, but it's the truth. And the reason we do Bible studies, yes, we need to do Bible studies and read our Bibles and gather in worship and follow the people of God. But it's not because there's some kind of secret message you're going to hear for the first time. It's simply that following in the path of the cross is hard. And it takes brick by brick to kind of build a life that is firm and on the rock, as Jesus says. Those who hear my words and put them into practice are those who like build their house on a rock, and those who don't are house on a sand. Building a house is a long process. Unless you're on TV and they do it in a week. But it's a long process. There's no silver bullet. There's no secret thing. The wisdom of the cross has always been there. The question is whether or not we want to follow it and do the hard work of allowing it to unfold. To be like the farmer who plants the seed and waits for that to become a tree 10 years, 20 years down the road. No, we don't want that. We want the quick fix. We want the 5-week plan that's going to make us a better husband. We want the 10-week plan to help us to quit lying. That doesn't work that way. It has to start with the cross at which we're humbled, in which we see that what was done for us there is all that we'll ever need. There's no secret thing. So you're not going to see this on our website, that the next sermon series is going to be the one that's going to change your life, because it's not. There's only one thing that will change your life, and it's the cross. And Paul says he wrote 16 chapters of really hard theology to the Romans. It's a great book, but it's reducible to one thing. I boast only in the cross. Only in the cross. Nothing else. We come as sinners. We don't come pretending to be other than we are. This isn't a place of perfection. This isn't a place where you need to look your best, or that you need to pretend to be someone that you're not. This is a place where we come to the foot of the cross. And it's always going to be tempting to boast in something other than that. But we can't be tempted in that. And so we will do our best that in I don't know if you've ever noticed this before, but it's a messy, yeah. Dan calligraphied the handwriting on this, and Randy made it and put it in there, and it's been there for a while. For those of you who can't see it, it says, "Preach Christ crucified." It's 1 Corinthians 1. That is to say, don't you dare open your mouth this morning unless that's exalted, unless that's the heart of what it means to be gathered in the church. Old Lutherans had a great saying, to test the veracity of a sermon. And I love this. It says, how do you know a Christian sermon? The question is, did Christ need to die on the cross for that sermon to be preached? Isn't that a great message? Let's say there's some generic message about God that could be attached to anything. A generic message about God that just talks about his various precepts, things that we can do for him, but doesn't say that the one thing that matters is something we can never do for ourselves, then it's not a Christian sermon. It doesn't matter. Boast only in the cross, Paul says. How we live our lives is we boast only in the cross. The humility that comes from coming to the foot of the cross is that which enables us to live a life free. Free. Because Jesus says, when we don't follow the cross, look at all the burdens we place on people's shoulders, and then we shut the door of heaven in their face. Well, the cross is the place where burdens are laid down, and the doors of heaven are opened up. And a life lived in light of what he's done for us is now for us to take. Let us boast only in that. And when we do, that is where relationships have depth. That is where friendships last. That is where pretensions fall away. That is where arrogance is actually devastated, and humility and character and integrity take its place. Only in the cross. May we boast in that and never compromise the heart of that gospel. Let's pray.